I hit it twice. Fuck.
Yeah, hit it twice. Hit it twice while you can, because when you're older, you can't.
Shut up.
Congratulations, boy. I'm going to put my balls in your hands. And, you know, I trust you to hold my, to cut my balls. I'm not being turned on by this at all. That erection, that's not.
that's the wind.
It's not because it's turning me on. I'm always like that. Stiffy McGee, they call me. That's my nickname because I'm just Boner Jones. Now it's just.
Yours doesn't do that. Mine's always like this. Where do you get this stuff? Who talks like that?
I don't know. Idiots. Complete idiots we are. Welcome back, Life of Augustus. This will be Augustus 55 for your records,
55.
Ray?
All right,
because,
thank you.
Because Gary Unt was Augustus 54. And so this will be picking up after the Gary Unt show.
Right.
Last time on the show, you know, we sort of talked about a few little issues going on with Augustus. We had the Marina trials, Capio, the big conspiracy, mm-hmm. and you know, there's a few tensions, few people anyway back in Rome who. Aren't really happy with the way things are going. So he decides, you know what? Time to get out of Dodge.
Yeah.
Time to get the fuck out of Dodge.
First of all, as far as his immediate threat is concerned, it's amazing how a couple of quick deaths will neutralize a threat. Because I think last time we spoke, we said these people, when they were found, there was no discussion, there was no debate, there was no trial, there was no chance for them to hire anybody or even give words in their defense. They were killed immediately. But yeah, now that he's done that, it's maybe, you know, time to go on tour. Take the show on tour and get out of town and let things cool down while you're away.
Well, yeah, I think there would have been a trial, but they ran away before there was a trial. So that's just, you know, tantamount to an admission of guilt. In the eyes
Absolutely.
Of the Romans.
Mm. That's true. And they're going to pay the price.
Mm. So, all in all, Augustus actually stays in Rome for 2 years during this period. And then he decides he's gonna go on tour. Take it on the road. Take the Augustus show on the road. Test it out in the provinces. See how it goes. And this is something that he does for the rest of his life. He'll spend a little bit of time in Rome, and then he'll just fuck off for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And why not?
Yeah, really.
I would. Now if I could get away with that, I'd be traveling all the time.
Absolutely. So question number one is, when he went on his first tour, because we know he's going to head south, I wonder who sponsored the tour. Was it Coors? Was it a software company? I don't know. You can give me your thoughts on that. And second of all, I just find it interesting that he's got to get the hell out of there. And so if you think about it, because he is not in Rome for decent amounts of time, the day-to-day machinery, or however you want to think of it, of his empire was actually developed by other people. And we've always talked about Team Caesar from the moment Julius Caesar died. But these are people who are handling the details. He's making sure that he's still in power. He's got the security. He's still in charge of the vast majority of troops. But there are other people who are handling the little things. And that's the best part about being an emperor. You let someone else handle it, and then you go on the road. Why wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, but not all emperors did that. I mean, he ended up being away from Rome from this point on more than he was actually in it.
Yeah.
But I think it's not until Hadrian that an emperor would be as much as Augustus was. But, you know, he's got the travel bug. I think. And I think it's partly that.
Right.
He wants to see. He's got an empire. If I had an empire, I'd want to go see it. See what I've
got. Check this shit out. Yeah. What's mine? Put his name on everything.
Yeah, he wanted to piss on every corner of the empire, cat style.
That's right.
So people could smell it.
Is there any other way? Right.
Yeah. But I think, in all seriousness, I think part of it was if he was in Rome, same with Agrippa, when they were in Rome, it was just a little bit too obvious that they were in Rome. So right. They had to get out of Rome so people could... It's less... Like, just imagine that your wife took a lover. Well, you don't have right. to imagine, because we know no. she probably has, because let's face it...
So you wouldn't bring it up.
You're not satisfying her, but let's say your wife took a lover... And you know, the lover moved into your house.
Right, it's right.
And he's a tall black dude, you know, nope. goes to the gym a lot, you know, huge pecs, lots of abs. He's got a ninth right. ab. He's got nine abs like Batman, nine pack, like Lego Batman. I'm Lego Batman. I'm Batman. Got a nine pack. And, you know, when he's in the house...
Right.
Walking around with a towel on, and then it slips Loin off all cloth. The time. Yeah, and
right.
his dick hangs down to his knees, and nope. and Heather, your wife, is just like drooling over him all the time. It's in your face, but when he's gone,
when it's in her face, it bothers me. But go ahead.
When he's gone, when he's not living in the house, and he gets his own place.
Right.
You know, it's easier for you to deal with because he's not there swinging his dick in your face every day.
Exactly.
And you can kind of pretend that things are normal. You yeah. pretend that she's not having an affair. No, no, my wife loves me. I'm a real yeah. man. I'm able to
That's
satisfy
right.
her.
Ooh, yeah.
So I think yeah. it's the now, same thing with Augustus and Agrippa.
Well, now, I'm sorry, I have to retort. In my defense, I am such an inadequate lover that when I masturbate and I'm done, I look at the left hand and I go, maybe you could have been done better. I don't know. It's just not, it's not in my wheelhouse. I'm just not there yet. I'm still working on my techniques. But anyway, let's get on with the story. That twist, that twirl that you told me to do at the end, still working on that. Almost threw out a hip, but I'm going to get there.
This is the worst podcast in history. What are we doing?
Again, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to apologize. And for those of you who don't vote for us for awards, this is probably why.
What are we doing? What are we doing with our lives? We're grown men. I'm nearly 50. You're 50.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
We are holding on to our youth in any way we possibly can. That's what we're doing. We're taking pills. We're watching our manhood shrivel, but we're going to hold on to our manhood any way we can.
I'm regressing, I think. You know, when I was in my late teens and my early 20s, my hair started to go gray in my early 20s, and I wanted to be, you know, perceived as mature. As intelligent. Right. So I acted very, you know, I tried to act anyway, very mature, very serious. Mm-hmm. So I was a very serious mm-hmm. young mm-hmm. man, working my way through the ranks, making money, trying to do serious things that serious men do. And I think I turned a corner at some point and just went, fuck this, I'm going to go back to being a teenager.
It's a lot more fun. Exactly. Yeah. And you haven't let go of that yet. Good for you.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get back to Augustus. Yes. So over the course of his life, he visits every province.
Yeah.
You wanted to say something?
No, I just find it fascinating just to stop for a moment and truly appreciate the fact that he can get out of town, that he quite frankly wants to get out of town. And as we're going to find out later, some of the people are not excited about that, but he can go away for long stretches of time and his power base is safe. I mean, Caesar, you know, his adoptive father gets killed. Yes, he was almost killed a couple times, but now he's gotten to the point where he can leave, which is normally when someone does something and they take over, but he can leave for long stretches of time and it's okay. I mean, that is quite a leap from back when his adoptive father was assassinated. It's a pretty amazing accomplishment, and he's not done.
Well, yeah, I mean, but as we've pointed out before, anyone who could potentially have been a serious threat is dead.
That helps.
And he's so far ahead of the pack in terms of wealth and prestige, autoritas, power, military support. It's going to be very difficult for anyone to lay a hand on him at this stage. Not impossible to be assassinated,
though. It only takes one crazy fuck with a knife to run up to him and at least try.
Which I think is one of the reasons why he gets out of Rome a lot over the course of his life, just to, you know, it's there's probably less threat of that in the provinces, because the people in the provinces, as we'll see over the course of the next episode or two, they don't really give a fuck. I mean, makes no difference to them.
You all look alike. Yeah, you all look the same to us in a toga. What the fuck ever? Who do I pay my taxes to?
Oh, another white man that's my king. Okay, yeah, whatever. The key thing to remember here is, yes, he's another white man who's the king, like they've had since forever, most of these people in the provinces. Right. But he brings Pax Augusta.
Yeah.
Pax Romana, the peace. He brings the peace. These people have been at war as long as they can remember. They either wars between their nation and another nation, or between their king and another king, or getting sucked into Roman civil war after Roman civil war after Roman civil war. Absolutely. Going back to Sulla and Marius and Julius Caesar and Pompey and Brutus and Cassius and Mark Antony. Yeah. And finally, after generations of this, they've got peace. They can
peace in our time.
Fuck their sheep. By the way, I'm going to a sheep farm tomorrow, as people may have seen on Facebook.
Ooh,
Chrissy and Fox and I got a client, new client, who owns a sheep station in central Queensland. Now so we're going to fly 3 hours north.
Mm.
Then the client's picking us up and driving an hour and a half west. Actually, no, we're driving east. But anyway, it doesn't matter. We're flying into the middle of Queensland, which is as big as Texas. And then we're driving an hour and a half away from where the airport is, tiny little airport, to a sheep farm, sheep station.
Right.
We're going to spend 4 days in a sheep station. And Ray, you know, I don't want you to be jealous.
Too late.
yes, too fucking late. I'm sure there will be some very beautiful sheep there. But you are my main sheep.
Aww. Hold on. Okay. Anyway,
Where were we? So they don't give a fuck. They get to the people out in the provinces. They want to just raise their kids, have sex with their sheep, live their lives. And if Augustus can bring peace, then he's even better than most of the previous kings or emperors or pharaohs or whatever they've had previously.
Or and sheep don't get a headache.
Or Roman, you know, proconsuls, governors, even these guys. Right. They would come, they would go. You'd have them a year on, 2 years tops, 5 years sometimes in the case of like Caesar and Gaul in the bad period. But
right.
Anyway, in 22, which is where we're at now, 22 right. CE.
Fall of 22.
He goes to Sicily. Mm-hmm. Which was Rome's oldest overseas province. Now, I have the question for you. Is Sicily really overseas? For people that are geographically challenged, Sicily is the soccer ball that the boot of Italy is kicking.
Right. Good one.
It's not really. It's like Tasmania to Australia. Right. It's like, well, I was going to say Cuba to the United States. Probably not a good analogy. It's not really overseas, I don't think. Do you?
Well, here's how they probably defined it. If I had a fleet and I can stop you from getting to the mainland, to Sicily, it's overseas. I mean, it takes ships to get there. You know, we've talked about blockades in the past. I think they would just define it in that terms. If you have to take a ship to get there, they're going to call it a part of their overseas or empire. But I see your point. It is extremely close. But you, unless you're Jesus or Julius Caesar, you can't walk on water. You have to take a ship to get there.
Okay. Got to take a ship, you reckon?
Yeah, that's what it comes down to.
So he goes to Sicily. Now, Sicily gets its name from the Sicels, who were first mentioned in Homer's Odyssey. They probably moved there from northern Italy or Illyricum in the early first millennium BCE. And as we know, Sicily was Rome's Rome's granary.
Mm-hmm.
stored all of their grain there. Not sure why there, though, but they did. I guess maybe because it was hard to get to, hard for people to break in and steal, easy to defend, being a little island, maybe.
Well, I also know that they were that's where they grew a lot of grain, so it was probably just the fact that that was its point of origin. You might as well just store it there until you need to take it to the mainland, because then you can't trust any of those Roman bastards once they get access to it on the mainland.
Okay. That's a guess. I mean, island. I don't think of islands as being a great place to grow grain, like tiny islands, but okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
It wasn't, though, part of one of his territories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was given a handful of territories. We talked about Spain, etc. This wasn't right. one of them, but as we saw in a previous episode, he now had his greater imperium.
Right. Which he whipped out his imperium. The Sicilian government whipped out his imperium. Boom, not a contest. Mm. And he can always use the excuse, well, we've had this grain shortage. I'm just going to go down there, make sure everything's okay. Just because, again, I am Rome's greatest servant. I will be until the day I die. This is kind of my thing. So I'm just going to go down there and make sure everything is okay, because all I do is work for the people.
And Sicily then, as now, had a large active volcano, Mount Etna, largest active volcano in Europe presently.
Mm, wow.
Named after David Markham's wife, Etna.
I knew that.
Yeah.
Did she have a temper? I mean, I don't know.
He does. He's the active volcano. Get a couple of drinks in him.
That's true.
The anti-American attitudes are tiresome. Today, Sicily has a population of just over 5 million, which is 8% of the Italian population.
Damn. Mm. Ass to elbows.
Anywho, as you say, the famine's probably a good reason for him to go and visit Sicily.
Yeah. Now, I thought it was interesting that we know that later on, there is going to be established instructions for the proconsuls called mandata, but theoretically some of them might have been written up earlier by Augustus, or let's be honest, by Team Caesar. And so he's going to have instructions for his imperial provinces, but he probably also handed them out to the Senate's provinces. So again, these people know what they're supposed to do. He's not coming there to challenge anybody. They have their local squabbles to judge over and deal with and all this stuff. He's coming there. He's the big man on the stage. He's just there for the photo ops, take a look around, kick some tires, whatever, shake hands, kiss babies or kick babies. I don't know, whatever. And so there's really no threat to the local governor there. He's just there. This is the first whistle stop on his tour. He's just looking around, trying to get a sense of what's going on in his empire.
Yeah, and you know, the proconsuls in these areas only had a term of 1 year, and it's hard to get much done in a year, particularly something that needs a longer-term focus. One of the problems with modern democracies, I think, is that they go in for four-year terms, typically 3 to 4 years.
Right.
In Australia, it tends to be 3 and a bit years, but these are... This is very difficult to accomplish, major things in that amount of time. But here we have Augustus. He's not going anywhere. He is the one consistent authority across
the one true God.
Empire. So he's able to tackle longer term issues, whereas the proconsuls really can't. They're in and out. Though they can do short term things like dispensing justice and hearing cases and making day-to-day decisions. But he's able to go out to these provinces and think long-term. Okay, over the next 5 to 10 years, what do we need to happen here?
Right.
And he's going to be there. He's going to be able to see it through. He's going to be able to follow through in his vision. You know, it's also similar to guys like when Bill Gates was running Microsoft or Steve Jobs was running Apple or Rupert Murdoch running News Corp, as opposed to most CEOs these days that aren't company founders. Right. I guess we could throw an Elon Musk in there and people like that now, but or Zuckerberg, but you have that breed of CEOs, company founders who are going to be there for decades, and they can make the long-term bets. Right. I know when I worked at Microsoft, Gates used to talk a lot about that. Like, we take long-term views on things. We have 10, 15-year visions. Most CEOs come and go. You know, they're brought in by the board. They do a 2-year stint, 3-year stint. Then they're gone.
Right. Golden parachute or shower, and they get out.
Yeah. Yeah. Very hard to take a long-term view. But here is Augustus. And this is a new thing, or not a new thing. It's a recent thing for Rome. They did have kings, obviously, going back 500 years, 600-700 years. They had kings, but they haven't had it for centuries. So having the one guy with the long-term view is new. Now, not new that so much for the provinces, even though they've been under Roman control for a while, most of them at this stage, 100 years or more. Mm-hmm. But they're used to, you know, the Persian kings or the Hellenistic kings before that, that came after Alexander, the Seleucids and the mm-hmm. Ptolemies.
Yeah,
the Parthians, that's right. So they're mm-hmm. kind of used to this, but it's a different thing for the Romans to have this one guy, long-term view. So I think it's interesting. There's some good and there's some bad that obviously comes with this for everybody involved.
And we're about to find out about some bad, because before Augustus left, he forgot to pick up some very sharp object, I don't know, you know, whatever, and cut the umbilical cord because it started tugging back on him when he's in Sicily. He's not there very long, but then he starts getting, tug on the old line attached to his belly button.
It's like when the black dude left your house... And after like 2 days, you were like, I miss, God, what's a good black dude's name? D'Angelo? I miss D'Angelo and his big black swinging dick. Like, what? Have you got his, he sold up to Heather and have you got his number? I just want to, give him a call.
Okay. I'm about to say something, and remember, you pushed me to this. Okay. You remember that. I want everybody on this listening to the show to know after he left, that was the one and only time I did blackface to try to get a chance to be with my wife. But, you know, she could tell the difference. So I cried, and you can see the tears, the streaks coming down, and it revealed the truth anyway. So you made me say that. Okay?
I did not think you were going there.
So and funny. I did. Yeah. So we're not going to win any awards next year. Thank you, or for this year, everybody who listens, we really appreciate it.
We might as well just send the show voting. Now. We're done. Yeah.
don't even bother voting.
We're done.
And we're moving on to whoever comes after Augustus.
Oh, shit.
Anyway.
Yeah, so he barely settles in to Syria. Syria? Yeah. Fuck, Sicily. That's the other show. Plug for our new show, The Bullshit Filter, bullshitfilter.com. Now listed on iTunes and in your other podcast as The BS Filter, because the fucking prudes at Apple wouldn't let me use the word bullshit in the title.
I let my kids say that word. So out of all the bad words out there, that's to me is one of the cleanest. I'm sorry, Dad, that's bullshit. That's what I hear all the time. And she's 9. Yeah. So, but good for you for finally getting it up there.
Yeah. So look for us, the BS filter. The things that people get offended by. I had a guy attack me on Twitter yesterday about the Jesus documentary and the trailer. By the way, about 18 days left to go on the...
Come on, people, step up.
Actually, by the time you hear this, it'll be like a week and a half left to go on
We'll go ahead and put it out early. That's what I do.
The Jesus show. Yeah.
Jesus.
We're about halfway funded. We've got a long way to go. It's not nice. No. I'd like to be 150% funded by now. Yes. So if you haven't... And you want to support it, jump up. But this guy attacked me on Twitter and said, "Oh, you know, he called me a douchebag on Twitter. Said I was being offensive, disrespectful, a disrespectful douchebag." And I said, "Well, how do you think I'm being disrespectful?" And when he came back, was in the trailer for the film. It has me walking through a church, drinking coffee, and then taking the name of the Lord in vain because I drink a cup of hot coffee, go, "Oh, Jesus," and then you know. And it's supposed to be It's supposed to be funny. I said to him, come on, dude. Like, it's not like I'm snorting coke off of Jesus' dead corpse then banging a hooker dressed up as his mother. Now, that would be disrespectful and offensive. But really, I'm drinking coffee and I say, Jesus, that's what you term as being offensive?
Yeah, like, and you didn't even use a cuss word. You just said Jesus. So I thought it was funny. And again, and again, I know you've said this a billion times, but what you're trying to do is investigate, you know, the origins and the was there Jesus in the Bible and the writings. I mean, you're trying to bring knowledge to them. You're not attacking anything. You're just shedding some light on it. But for some people, I don't know.
People go looking for a reason to be offended by things, I think.
That's true.
Social justice warriors, they just want to get offended. It feels good. It feels good to be offended.
Well, I'm glad you got the show, people, because we offend every 2.3 minutes. So hang in there. Another one's coming.
We do our best. Anyway, so yes, he's barely settled into Sicily when he's called back to Rome. The Comitia Centuriata, the Committee of the Centurions, had voted him co-consul for the next year. He wasn't even a candidate. They wrote his name in, like people, like my mother-in-law wrote in Mitt Romney in the last election.
Good for her. Yeah. So, do they all have to bring a piece of coal or a stylus or a pen or whatever? I don't know. And just a paintbrush. They're holding a paintbrush up. He's got a little bit of paint, and they write his name in. But they had to do it on a massive scale. But here's the most important thing to know about this: we are not talking about the absolute dregs of society voting for Augustus. For everybody who knows how the voting system works, the most elite in packs of 100 vote first. So normally their votes count and everybody else's votes do not count, because by then you've already got your leader. So we're talking about the well-established, well-entrenched blue bloods of this country voting for this man, hoping he comes back, almost demanding that he comes back, because they don't trust what's going to happen to their country with him physically away. I mean, again, that's just a staggering success on his part.
He didn't think of it that way.
No, he did not. He did not.
They refused to elect anyone else. He sent him a message going, ha-ha, nice one, guys. Get serious. This is fucking the government of Rome we're talking about here.
Yeah.
I'm not. I'm busy. I'm down in Sicily. checking at the grain. Checking at the grain. And they refuse to elect anyone else. They demand that he returns. He refuses to go back. So there's a Mexican standoff.
Yes. Mexican-Roman standoff.
He said in his memoirs that he twice refused the dictatorship, and the suggestion is that this might be the second time. They're demanding, the centurions are demanding that he comes and plays the role of dictator, or at least becomes co-consul.
Right, because they've elected one, but they refuse to elect another one, which is pretty funny. But you have to remember, a couple of months ago, he stood out there with the Romans in the city and tore at his clothes. And you know, he was just venting his frustration, because that was a well-established practice to show someone how frustrated you were or whatever. So he's tearing at his clothes. I'm not going to do it. You can't make me do it. I've retired. You know, I gave all that up. And so they're ignoring that. They're demanding that he comes back. So there is one consul, but as all the men out there know, it's like having one testicle. Yeah, it's nice, but you want to.
Hey, so, didn't stop Hitler. Yeah. Now, do you know what the name of this one consul for the year 21 is?
Was that Marcus Lollius?
Marcus Lollius, but his friends just called him Candy. When Marcus Lollius got angry with people, as he did, he had a temper. He said, you keep that up, I'll take you to the candy shop.
Yeah.
So seductive. I take you to the candy shop. I let you lick the lollipop.
Woo, there goes the pants.
Girl, don't you stop. Keep going till you hit the spot. Whoa.
I'll take you to the candy shop.
Yeah, he said, I'll take you to the candy shop and you can lick my lollipop.
Right. That's a good song to take with you to the sheep station, but I'll let you decide.
Candy had a pretty good story. He was a legate to Brutus during Philippi, the Battle of Philippi, got prescribed as a result of that, disguised himself as a slave.
As a sheep. No, as a slave.
Got sold to his old friend Quintus Aemilius Lepidus. Reveals himself to Lepidus. He took off the fake mustache and went, aha!
Ta-da!
It is I, Lepidus. Candy. Lepidus then goes to Agrippa and asks him to intercede on Candy's behalf with Augustus, who, of course, lifts the prescription. Then, at Actium, Lepidus is on the side of Antony.
Mm-mm.
He gets captured and Candy intercedes on his behalf.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's a fucking story in that. It's like this old song, Two Little Boys, man, which I think I've played on the show once before. Anyway. Old Rolf Harris song, Rolf Harris, great Australian entertainer, now in jail for child molestation or sex. No, yeah, for child porn. Some I don't know. I can't remember. Yeah. Something horrible. Rape, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. Let's forget that ever happened. And now this dude, Candy, Marcus Lollius, is a consul. So he's gone from being prescribed and disguising himself as a slave, being sold as a slave in disguise, to being a consul. So that's some fucking story.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just thought it was interesting. So this one consul, Candy, he assembles the assembly, and he tells them to elect him a colleague, but the meeting completely breaks down, not unlike a Trump rally or anything like that's been going on since Trump's been elected. So there's two men who want the position really, really bad because they just want to serve the Roman people, and their supporters just start going at each other. I'm sure it's just trash talk at first, but then someone probably starts swinging, so they can't make a decision. So you've got Quintus Lepidus on one side and you've got Lucius Silvanus on the other side, and neither one of them are willing to back down for the good of the state, because we all know that they just want power so they can get money and you know, have power. And so something has to happen because they're at a log jam. Nothing can get done. They can't have a second colleague, and they want Augustus to come back and either become the consul or at least solve this freaking problem.
And you just sort of, I think, missed the point that this is the same Quintus Aemilius fuckingus Lepidus that Candy was sold to as a slave and then had to be saved by Lolly after the Battle of Actium. Same guy.
They saved each other. They saved each other.
And now they're looking to be consuls. Yeah, so there's a sort of this riot between their two camps. Augustus still refuses to return. He says, my name is Paul and this is between y'all. I'm busy. But he summons these two guys to Sicily, where he bitch slaps them, and they are banned from attending the next election themselves. They can still run, but they're not allowed to attend and stir up the troops. So they run the elections again. There are still riots. And one of them is finally elected. Which one? Quintus Aemilius fuckingus Lepidus.
Yeah. He's a stayer. But he's a stayer.
It just goes to show, Augustus can't leave Rome for 2 minutes with Agrippa also being away without Rome becoming a shitstorm again. Like, overnight, there's fucking riots. They can't... I mean, this is kind of... I think the point I want people to remember with all of this stuff... You know, we talked about with Julie, Big Julie, what a clusterfuck Rome was before Big Julie took control, took the wheel. And it's the same with Augustus. Here we are, what did I say? It's 21. So fucking 23 years after Julie's been killed.
Yeah.
And it's still, as soon as Augustus is out of the room, the kids are fighting. You know, he can't leave them alone for 1 minute without shit breaking out. This is the sort of the atmosphere in Rome that he and Agrippa have been fighting to prevent. So when we look at Augustus with these historical glasses and we say, well, you know, he destroyed the Republic and he created the Empire and Julius Caesar tried to do the same thing, we have to remember that these guys, the Senate, the elite, the aristocrats of Rome, not all of them, but generally speaking, they were a bunch of fucking retards.
Right. And they don't care about anything except for advancing their own careers, which is normal. But yeah, at some point you've got to think of something other than yourself just so you don't end up in another civil war. But as far as this incident goes, Dio wrote, "This incident showed clearly that it was impossible for them to be safe under a democracy, for with the little power they had over the elections and in regards to offices, even then, they began rioting." So again, even he's making the thing. He gives them one task. All you have to fucking do is elect two consuls while I'm gone. That's it. They'll take their orders from me. They'll take their orders from Team Caesar. Just put two people in those chairs. And they can't even do that while he's gone.
So he finally gives in and recalls Agrippa back to Rome. He's like, dude, yeah. Look, I know you're all set up there and, you know, wherever the fuck Lesbos. He was. Lesbos, yeah. I know it's a lot of lesbian action going on. I hate to drag you away from that. But these guys, man, one of us needs to be there and it's you. So he sends you back. Dio writes, he compelled Agrippa to divorce his wife, even though she was the emperor's own niece, and to marry Julia, and sent him to Rome at once to attend both to the wedding and to the administration of the city. This step is said to have been taken partly on the advice of Maecenas, who in counseling him upon these very matters said, "You have made him so great that he must either become your son-in-law or be slain."
Damn.
So
yeah, because
again,
he's almost Augustus himself. Yeah,
yeah. Well, this is, you know, we touched on this before with the whole Marcellus thing and why Agrippa left Rome in the first place. This suggestion that he was a threat to Augustus, I don't know. I find very hard to get my head around that. Up until this point, everything we've seen for 20 odd years, Agrippa has just been the loyal number two.
Who Absolutely. Does number two work for?
He's a very loyal. So I find that these suggestions that he could be an enemy is interesting. But anyway, for whatever reason, he does make him his son-in-law.
Yeah. Well, here's the part. I mean, we joke around or whatever, and you can say all the bad things you want about about Augustus and that Agrippa really needed him. But what it comes down to is these two gentlemen, they took, forget their birth, forget their station in life, forget their wealth, forget everything. They took this the running of the state extremely seriously. So when Augustus says, "I need you to divorce your wife, you've probably gotten used to her by now, I'm really sorry, you're going to marry my daughter," and they're going to go on to have five kids or whatever. But it's something that you just do. We don't know if Agrippa whined or whined, "No, I really love her, I want to keep her," whatever. But yes, sir, I will do it. I will divorce her. I will marry this other person, even though she hasn't done anything wrong to me. I'll go back to Rome and I'll run it. These two guys take this very seriously. It turns out that one of them probably needs to be there when the other one's not there. But this is just something, it's just a matter of course for them. They've been doing it for a very long time now, and they just realize whatever it takes to get to keep this ship of state going calmly, we will do whatever it takes. And so, like you said, Agrippa says, "Yes, sir," and he goes back to Rome and he starts running things because Augustus made it clear he won't be back for a while.
Now, this is his third wife, Agrippa's third wife, Julia the Elder, Augustus's daughter. He was originally married to the daughter of Atticus, Pomponia Caecilia Attica.
Right.
She died after 12 years of marriage. So when did they marry? Around 37. So she died in, 25?
Mm-hmm.
So she's been dead.
Yeah.
dead for a couple of years. And then he married Claudia Marcella.
Yeah. Caesar's niece?
Yes. Augustus's sister's daughter.
Right. Complicated.
Now he's marrying Julia the Elder.
So this very quickly becomes a West Virginia story. But again, it's not about love. It's about politics and doing whatever it takes to protect the state and quite frankly, their own power base. There's, you know, but yeah, everybody's intermarrying. And we have to remember, Romans were okay with this. Romans didn't see marriage like we do for love and whatever. No, it was all about either a temporary alliance or a political necessity, whatever. That was just part and parcel of what it meant to be a Roman aristocrat. And so we might think a lot of it, but they did not at the time. But unfortunately, I have no idea how Augustus really, how Agrippa felt about this. Hey, I'm sorry. I got to leave you for a younger woman, but the guy's making me. What am I supposed to do? But he literally split, did what he was told to do.
Mm. Now, she, of course, had been married previously to Marcellus. He's now dead.
Slightly.
But she's only 18 now.
Yeah.
She was married. She was 14 when she was married off first time. We talked about that big deal, you know, the joining of the two.
They're first cousins. Yeah.
Very Virginia. Now she's 18, and he is 25 years older than her.
Damn.
He's been about the same age, maybe slightly older than Augustus. So he's in his early to mid 40s, and she is 18 now. Ray, can you imagine? As a man of your age, being married to an 18-year-old?
Hold on. Just let me enjoy this for a moment. Yeah. So even though he's busy running half the world with his pal, Augustus, they are going to go on and have 5 children because obviously you take care of the office, but you obviously take care of stuff at home. They're going to have 5 children. Gaius Caesar, Julia the Younger, Lucius Caesar, Agrippa the Elder, Agrippa the Younger and Agrippa Posthumus. So he's gonna give it to her good while he's helping running the known world.
Well, yeah, maybe they were all his.
Maybe not. He's gone a lot, so hey, who knows?
Yeah.
The house slave,
and
the
it
big
was,
black guy, what's his name?
And it was a wonderful scandal-free marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Or not.
Right.
Yeah, we'll talk about her scandals much later on in life.
Gotcha.
Mostly after Agrippa's dead, but still.
Sure.
So, point right now is Agrippa gets sent back to Rome. Now, Ronald Syme, always the cynic, suggested that Augustus deliberately left Rome and sent Agrippa away deliberately because he knew shit would break out. Back in Rome, the Romans would miss him and beg him to come back. What do you think of that theory?
I don't agree with that completely. One, he has to send Agrippa to the east. That place needs to be cleaned up. It's been financially raped 3 times, as we said before. You have to send a strong message to the Parthians, even though they're having trouble right now with their civil war or the threat of civil war. You still got to let them know that there's a man roughly nearby who can react in case they decide to do something stupid. Augustus really does want to get out of there. I think he suspects that something may happen and it's going to truly give him a headache, but I don't think he left on purpose to set it up. He's already done everything he needs to do. He's got the people on his side. The senators are even voting for him now because they want stability. I don't buy into that completely.
It's an interesting theory, though. That's some Machiavellian shit, you know.
Yeah.
I'll leave so you'll miss me. Of course, he does have, Augustus does have some of his guys still there. Taurus is still there. Maecenas is still there, keeping an eye on shit. It's not like he's totally evacuated the scene, but.
Sure.
Anyway, he has to send Agrippa back. Now, Augustus himself stays in Sicily Sicily. Through the winter of 22-21, and it's his first visit since the war that he had back with Sexy P. The good old days of Sexy P. Wow, remember him?
The pirate.
Yeah, Sexy P, youngest son of Big Daddy P the G. P to the G.
Now you have to remember, I was just going to say, and you're probably going to mention this, but yeah, after all the fighting and with Sexy P, you know, Sicily had to pay the price for that. So, you know, their cities were plundered in 36 BC. Land was taken. You have to kill the leading citizens because that's just something you do when you take over territory, something I would do. And when you go to the sheep station, if any sheep give you any trouble, you kill a couple of them to terrorize the rest of them. But anyway, so they took a lot of land.
Kill the leaders, the toughest ones.
The toughest one, and then send, eat them for dinner.
Send a message, yeah.
That's right. And then Agrippa was given a lot of land there, you know, estates, kind of a financial reward for all that he had done. So this place was in the middle of a civil war, not that they had much of a choice. And then the victor beat, you know, just ripped the guts out of them financially in a lot of other ways. And it's been a couple of years now. Hopefully they're back on their feet. He just wants to see how things are going now that he's in the area. Let's see how it's turned around, because even though they're getting grain from Egypt, they're getting grain from North Africa, the grain coming from Sicily is still important, especially when you're dealing with a famine and a potential famine in the future. So they still need to be able to produce an X amount of grain to help out with the Roman mainland. So he needs to make sure this place is running smoothly for the benefit of the people back in Rome.
You know, they had been granted, the people of Sicily, Latin rights by Big Julie way back. But of course, Augustus probably revoked that after they sided with Sexy P. Now, by now, Egypt and North Africa are supplying most of the grain to Italy, to Rome, but Sicily is still an important source.
Oh, yeah.
Augustus, while he's there, founds six new colonies, including Syracuse, Catania, and Palermo, of course, where the mafia are from. They had already existed in some form, obviously, before that, but he settles some discharged veterans and civilians there and orders huge building projects, builds temples and basilicas and amphitheatres, and grants some of the city's Latin rites again. So he's on a rebuilding tour of amore he's doing. He's like, listen... Let's bygones be bygones. Let's Romify your cities here, man. Like this is you can do better. I'm bringing the money, bringing the vision. We're gonna turn you into a place you can be proud of. Just don't fuck with me again.
That's right. don't make me be a dick, please don't. He's going to start some projects, hoping that will inspire some of the other well-off people to build as well. And so this is going to work out for him. And again, he's probably redrawn some lines, like you said. He's going to start suggesting that they build things, and he's going to bring several cities together, because like you said, some of these places were already there, but he's going to change it around a little bit to make it more organized, to make it more structured and make it work better. Because again, at the end of the day, all he cares about is it's a smooth running island that's producing grain, paying their taxes, and they're not causing him any trouble. As long as it can do that, he's a happy man.
Now, the cities in Sicily that benefited the most were the ones that were on the coast, particularly the northern and eastern coast, the ones that were closest to Italy. Right. They were all Greek cities, and they kept their Greek language and their Greek culture and some of their old cults and customs. Like we've talked about, like Lesbos, I said it's closer really to Turkey, but it's still considered one of the Greek islands.
Right.
It was the same with Sicily. Even though it was close to Italy, it was really considered part of Greater Greece.
Right.
Because the Greeks had been there, obviously, for a long time. So it's... a natural extension for him now to think about going from there to the other Greek-speaking provinces.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, I think before we do that, I think we might leave that for the next episode.
Okay. Yeah. So these people are going to catch on to what he wants. They're going to build things. They're going to Romanize themselves to a certain degree. But like you said, they're going to keep their customs. They're going to keep the ways they've been doing anything. And again, he is okay with that. You know, just meet me halfway. Just make the place look better or whatever, more organized. But if you want to keep, your cultures, I'm fine with that. As long as you pay your taxes and don't give me no shit, I can meet you halfway. And that's all he cares about.
Now, before we wrap up this episode, I do want to give do a review. It's been a while since we've done a review. This is a review from late last year from Godot Jones in the United States. Subject of Godot Jones's review is Take As Prescribed. Life of Caesar is a program in a group of podcasts called Selective Ignorance Inhibitors. The way this program works is still not fully understood. It is thought to positively affect communication concerning the late Roman Republic and early Empire by addressing informational imbalances within the brain. Life of Caesar is used to treat ignorance, misinformation, and chronic curiosity. You should not take Life of Caesar if you suffer from chronic humorlessness, severe closed-mindedness, or intellectual dwarfism. Life of Caesar may affect your ability to think uncritically and understand important junctures in the history of Western civilization. Do not take Life of Caesar if you've been diagnosed as a ditto head, Kardashian, or knuckle dragger. Common possible side effects in people taking Life of Caesar include total vaginal dryness, occasional spouting of left-wing political commentary with the fervor of a college freshman discovering Noam Chomsky, alcoholism related specifically to the consumption of limoncello. If you notice any of these symptoms after taking Life of Caesar, relax, it could be a lot worse.
That's true. Hair, hair, I like that. That was cool.
Nicely written, Godot Jones. Please send us an email, ave@lifeofcaesar.com, with your postal address, and we will send you a thank you, a token of our appreciation. If you are one of those people who goes off and listens to our Bullshit Filter podcast, search for BS Filter on iTunes or go to thebullshitfilter.com to find a subscription link. And you enjoy it, leave a clever, witty review for that also up on iTunes. We've got 3 episodes up, by the way. Leave us a clever review, and you might win yourself a Bullshit Filter coffee mug, or do it for Life of Caesar and win a coffee mug for this one thing.
Yes, please. Mm-hmm. Well said.
Like that? It was really smooth. All right, we're out. We'll be back soon.
Congratulations,
boy. I'm going to put my balls in your hands. And, I trust you to hold my, to cut my balls. I'm not being turned on by this at all. That erection, that's not.
that's the wind.
It's not because it's turning me on. I'm always like that. Stiffy McGee, they call me. That's my nickname because I'm just Boner Jones.
Indiana Bones doesn't do that. Mine's always like this.
I am the great Cornholio.